being 72 in number. But it might come to mind here to ask, is there anybody who was perhaps martyred after Imam Hussein? And we usually think of Imam Hussein as the last person who was practically martyred on the day of Ashura. But the question we want to ask today is whether was there anybody else who was martyred or who attained the station of martyrdom after him or not? The answer to this question is that yes, there were individuals who attained the station of martyrdom, let's put it that way, after Imam Hussein passed away and died and was martyred. And if we count them, take them into account, along with the 72 people who were martyred and Imam Hussein, before that, the total number of the martyrs of Karbala would actually come out to be 136 individuals. For example, there was a person called Ruwayd ibn Abi al-Mata'. He was somebody who was actually injured and was laying on the battlefield and had passed out and was unconscious. When he awoke, when he saw that everybody had passed away, he took out one of his swords or his knives and he tried to fight, you know, what was remaining of the army of Yazid, and you know he attained the station of martyrdom. Another person was a person by the name of Khafkhad ibn Mihnad al-Rasibi. This is a person, he had set off from Basra in order to assist the Imam. When he got to the plains of Karbala, he saw that no, everybody has died, Imam Hussein has attained martyrdom. He arrived too late. But at the same time when he arrived, he took out his sword, he began to fight. And after killing a few people from the army of the enemy, he attained the station of martyrdom. There are also other people who, it is interesting to note, they became injured in the fields of Karbala, right? They hadn't attained the station of martyrdom. But later on, as time passed, like for example, after a year, they died from their injuries and, you know, in this way, they attained the station of martyrdom. Right, so approximately, according to some researchers, some specialists in this field, the total number of actual people who actually died and attained martyrdom on the day of Karbala or from the Battle of Karbala comes to a total of 136 people. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the total number of people who actually died before or after the day of Ashura, and on the day of Ashura, in the Battle of Karbala. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
What you heard was an IRIB English Radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Some studies suggest that the risk of cardiovascular problems such as a heart attack or stroke remains high even many months after a SARS-CoV-2 infection clears up. Researchers are starting to pin down the frequency of these issues and what is causing the damage. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Saima Meisadir Ryder. This article is published under the heading Heart Disease After COVID, What the Data Say. Here's the story. In December 2020, a week before cardiologist Stuart Cotts was scheduled to receive his first COVID-19 vaccine, he came down with a fever. He spent the next 2 weeks racked with a cough, body aches, and chills. After months of helping others to weather the pandemic, Cotts, who works at New York University, was having his own first-hand experience of COVID-19. On Christmas Day, Cotts' acute illness finally subsided, but many symptoms lingered, including some related to the organ he's built his career around, the heart. Walking up two flights of stairs would leave him breathless, with his heart racing at 120 beats per minute. Over the next several months, he began to feel better and is now back to his normal routine of walking and cycling. But reports about COVID-19's effects on cardiovascular system have made him concerned about his long-term health. I say to myself, well, is it really over? Cotts says. In one study this year, researchers used records from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to estimate how often COVID-19 leads to cardiovascular problems. They found that people who had the disease faced substantially increased risk for 20 cardiovascular conditions, including potentially catastrophic problems such as heart attacks and strokes, in the year after infection with the coronavirus SARS-CoV-2. Researchers say these complications can happen even in people who seem to have completely recovered from a mild infection. Some smaller studies have mirrored these findings, but others find lower rates of complications. With millions or perhaps even billions of people having been infected with SARS-CoV-2, clinicians are wondering whether a pandemic will be followed by a cardiovascular aftershock. Meanwhile, researchers are trying to understand who is most at risk of these heart-related problems, how long the risk persists, and what causes these symptoms. It's a gaping hole in an important area of public health, says Cotts. We don't understand if this changes the lifelong trajectory for risk of a heart attack or a stroke or other cardiac events. We just don't know that, he said. Here, nature looks at the questions that scientists are asking and the answers they have uncovered so far. Doctors have reported cardiovascular problems related to COVID-19 throughout the pandemic, but concerns over this issue surged after the results of VA study came out earlier this year. The analysis by Ziad Al-Ali, an epidemiologist at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, and his colleagues, is one of the most effective efforts to characterize what happens to the heart and the circulatory system after the acute phase of COVID-19. The researchers compared more than 150,000 veterans who had recovered from acute COVID-19 with their uninfected peers as well as with a pre-pandemic control group. People who had been admitted to intensive care with acute infections had a drastically higher risk of cardiovascular problems during the next year. For some conditions, such as swelling of the heart and blood clots in the lungs, the risk shot up at least 20-fold compared with that in infected peers. But even people who had not been hospitalized had increased risk of many conditions, ranging from an 8% increase in the rate of heart attacks to a 247% increase in the rate of heart inflammation. For Al-Ali, the study added to the growing body of evidence that about of COVID-19 can permanently alter some people's health. These kinds of change fall under the category of post-acute sequel of COVID-19, which covers problems that emerge after an initial infection. This disorder includes and overlaps with the persistent condition known as long COVID, a term that has many definitions. Studies indicate that the coronavirus is associated with a wide range of lasting problems, such as diabetes, persistent lung damage, and even brain damage. As with these conditions, Al-Ali says that the cardiovascular issues that occur after SARS-CoV-2 infection can decrease a person's quality of life over the long term. Treatments do exist for these problems, but they are not curable conditions, he adds. Despite its large size, the VA study does come with caveats, say researchers. The study is observational, meaning that it reuses data that were collected for other purposes, a method that can introduce biases. For example, the study considers only veterans, meaning that the data are skewed towards white men. We don't really have any study like it that goes into more diverse and younger populations, says Eric Topol, a genomicist at Scripps Research in La Jolla, California. He thinks that more research is needed before scientists can truly quantify the frequency at which cardiovascular problems strike. Danielle Tensuri, a medical statistician at the University of California, Davis, points out another potential source of bias. One of the control groups in the VA study had to get through more than a year without catching SARS-CoV-2 to be included in the study. There could be physiological differences that make the control group less likely to contract the disease, which could also affect their susceptibility to cardiovascular problems. Still, Tansari thinks the study was well designed and that any bias is likely to be minimal. I wouldn't say that these members are exactly right, but they are definitely in the ballpark, he says. He hopes future prospective studies will fine-tune Al-Ali's estimates. Vaccinations, reinfections, and the Omicron variant of SARS-CoV-2 all pose new questions about the virus's cardiovascular effects. A paper published in May by Al-Ali and his colleagues suggests that vaccination reduces but does not eliminate the risk of developing these long-term problems. Hanson, a scientist, is also eager to model whether reinfections compound the risk and whether the relatively mild but widespread Omicron variant will affect the cardiovascular system as drastically as other variants. He says, "We are kind of chomping at a bit for follow-up data among Omicron cases."
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, firm determination of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You are listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio, and I'm your host, Hussein Henzano. Now, in today's lesson, we are talking about the firm determination of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. When you're talking about the firm determination of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, it makes us reflect on the characteristics and the characteristics of the personality of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Prophet Muhammad, at his time of prophethood, he had a firm determination against the enemies of Islam. He stood against them. He said anything that was to be said in order for him to make sure that Islam stands up and Islam stands strong. At the time, people really stood against him. People beat the Prophet at the time. People was talking bad words against the Prophet. People were saying bad things about the Prophet. People were talking, people did everything they could do to make sure that the Prophet is not successful in spreading his word of Islam. But at the same time, the Prophet stood against them firmly. He said, I'm not going to stand back against my religion. I'm not going to stand back and stop talking about Islam and stop spreading the religion of God, subhanahu wa ta'ala. So the Prophet continued. He stood firmly and he said he will continue no matter what. And he stood in every aspect of his life, in his personal life, in the life whereby he went for the battles. So Imam, if the Prophet was this fine in his characteristics. And then Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, as we see in his lifestyle, we realize that definitely he had a firm determination against the tyrant rulers of the time, against the Umayyad rulers of the time, against the Umayyad fighters of the time. He stood against them. He said, I'm never going to pay allegiance to any one of you. I'm going to stand and continue the path of my grandfather, Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam.
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we are talking about the firm determination of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam moved towards the field of honor and respect with his family members of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam and his companions so that he may hoist the flag of Islam and obtain a great success and victory for the nation of Islam till he finally reached martyrdom. Peace of God be on him, as he was the strongest person with regard to determination and foremost with regard to will and intention. Imam Hussein alayhi salam did not mind bearing all those circumstances that make the intellect and mind bewildered. We can reminisce on the happening of Karbala when Al-Imam Hussein and his holy progeny were there. They stood against a very big number of fighters. The fighters were ready to kill them, but Imam Hussein and his family stood firmly against them. No one stayed back. And in fact, Imam Hussein was reported at the time, he told all of his Sahabas, that whoever feels that he's not ready to stand against these bad rulers, bad fighters of the Umayyad fighters, he can go. He can leave and he's free to go. But still the Sahabas told Imam Hussein, oh Imam Hussein, we are not going to leave you alone. We're going to stand here and fight against these people as much as their number is bigger than us. This was the firm determination that could be realized, that could be read from the life of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Till next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en/islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
But anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Aperture.
Situated in a relatively remote desert at the Negev Nuclear Research Center, the Dimona reactor is a heavy water-moderated natural uranium-fueled reactor. Most independent analysts believe that in the mid-1970s, Israel upgraded the installation to generate between 70 and 150 megawatts. Now that output makes it not only the region's largest reactor, but the sole evident producer of plutonium and tritium for nuclear weapons. And although Israel neither confirms nor denies its atomic arsenal, experts believe that it's been a nuclear-armed regime now for several decades. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. While the Zionist regime of Israel has maintained its decades-long policy of deliberate ambiguity about its weapons of mass destruction, its deadly arsenal is not the only danger threatening lives. The very existence of the Dimona is a terror haunting Jordan and Israel's other neighboring countries. A higher rate of cancer and the constant fear of possible malfunctions at the reactor are some of the worries that locals must deal with on a daily basis. And the Israelis are aware of the possibility of a meltdown at the Dimona reactor, a meltdown that would affect an area reaching Cyprus and the entire neighboring region. What makes these concerns even more pressing are satellite images of the Dimona reactor, which show that its walls have cracks which could cut its life by half. Join us this week's documentary exploring the threats that Dimona is posing on its neighbors.
Let's talk about Dimona. Many people say, well, nobody knows.
You see, I blush, you say Dimona and I blush. We're not supposed to talk about Dimona. But
why?
Go ahead. Because it's a taboo. It's a taboo, it's a secret.
Negev Desert, south of Israel. This mysterious complex away from the public eye employs thousands of people, all sworn to secrecy. When its existence was discovered, Israel said it was a textile factory, never admitting its true purpose, making plutonium for atomic bombs. We need answers. And we go to meet one of the few people in Israel that knows what is going on inside Dimona.
We are dealing with this element of weapons of mass destruction, meaning nuclear, chemical and biological. We're the only NGO dealing with this right now in Israel. When you believe that these are the weapons that keeps you safe, when this is the common belief, then the question raised, are we the next country to use them? Israel is a nuclear armed state, chemical armed state, and biological armed state. Nuclear weapon is not a weapon that aimed at an army. It's a weapon that destroys a city. Are we willing to destroy any city in the Middle East? Mothers, children, fathers, citizens, not soldiers.
Want to know more about the most secretive nuclear program in the world?
Just transmitted at the request of the.
Is the Israeli nuclear plant at Dimona poisoning and threatening the lives of millions throughout the Middle East? From Tel Aviv, we go south. Our destination, Dimona. Approaching a nuclear plant is a high risk. The highway splices through the heat and sand of the Negev Desert. Barbed wire fence edges the road. Signs posted every few hundred meters warn drivers not to stop their vehicles under any circumstances.
They have cameras, they will see.
This is a military zone.
They said don't go off the road because we will shoot your ass. Military zone, no photography.
Finally, we can have a distant look at one of the world's most secret facilities. An exclusive view of a secret Israel is hiding since the 1960s. Dimona Nuclear Plant.
That's the gate. Go inside.
Only a few people in the world can say they know each corner of Dimona Nuclear Plant. All of them are sworn to secrecy. But there is someone that knows exactly how the building looks like.
It was a secret competition with the design of the civic center of a new atomic research center that was to be built in Dimona, in the south part of Israel. For security reasons, we couldn't call it a big center of research, what it was called, a civic center in the Negev. In the 60s, it wasn't such big news to have a textile factory in Dimona. So if you built something large in Dimona, you could very easily say, you see, this is a textile factory. Only that this textile factory had a dome and very... wasn't typical of textile things, but it wasn't seen from the road. It was kind of an agreed quietness. I have the photograph. While the project was being built, not when it was occupied. Then at that time, the security eye was not that strong. So I took the photographs. Later, many years afterwards, I all of a sudden got several photos from an unknown source, but with a stamp of the censorship. So I understood that somebody from the site sent me photos that were taken there. There's a sign that I can open my small portfolio and make it public. The courtyard of the main building, from the other side, looking towards the entrance. The detail of the stairs leading from the to the roof. You can have a roof cover, as you see here. You can go up to the roof undercover. There's a kind of...
This message is transmitted at the request of the United States
when
Office
President
of
Kennedy
Defense.
Took office, he knew from a CIA secret report that Israel was developing a nuclear program in the Negev. At the beginning of January 1961, Kennedy met the Israeli ambassador in Washington and expressed that the USA wanted to inspect Dimona to be sure about its purposes. Israel accepted, but under one condition, if it was done on a secret basis. For 5 months, the visit of the American inspectors to Dimona nuclear plant was postponed several times by Israel. Finally, an ultimatum from USA was accepted. Two American scientists were allowed to visit Dimona in May 1961. Israel imposed several rules on the American inspectors. They were not allowed to take any pictures or issue any comments about Dimona. When the inspectors finally entered the plant, they were misled. They were shown a fake control room on the ground floor. 12th of January 1961, the aim of the building built in the Negev was clear. In a high-level meeting between President Eisenhower and his staff, the US Secretary of Defense informs the president that based on intelligence findings, Israel was lying and Dimona was not for peaceful purposes. They were unaware of the six floors below where the plutonium was made. In search of answers, we travelled to Berlin in Germany. Here we are going to meet Xantha Hall. She is an expert in nuclear weapons and the director of International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Xantha Hall is also the coordinator of the European Parliament Commission Against Nuclear Proliferation.
The Israel Atomic Energy Commission is one of the most secret institutions in the world. It's responsible for Dimona. Its chairman is Netanyahu, but it's not even officially recognized as existing. All the other nuclear plants in the world are monitored by the Atomic Energy Agency, but not the ones in Israel. So we think it's about time that Dimona was also monitored. The one thing that needs to happen is that an independent body like the IAEA would go into Dimona and find out what is going on there, what is the state of the substance of the building, is the containment of the nuclear reactor still intact? What are they doing about cooling? Where is the nuclear waste being stored? How is it being stored? And all these questions, they need to be answered. We need some transparency.
Israel has not ratified the Non-Proliferation Treaty, way of avoiding inspections to its nuclear sites.
First of all, we are not obliged. We are not part of the treaties. We never signed the treaties, so we don't oblige. We never said we won't. That's one thing. Second thing is the US, and the third thing is the Holocaust.
How?
Guilt. Do you see Germany? Germany sold us the submarines. The US, they let us steal uranium. You go to the UN, to the NPT, to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and you hear the US delegation reading their statements, and when they talk about Israel, you see paragraphs that you know from the language was written by Israelis.
So Israel has a special treatment?
Yes, we're a special case.
Yoshi Melman is known as an investigative journalist, specialized in intelligence and strategic affairs. He was described by WikiLeaks as an information mule who has exchanged tips with the Mossad. But in 2009, Melman uncovered a terrible secret about Dimona. Workers at the nuclear reactor facility were made to volunteer to drink uranium in 1998 as part of an experiment.
The workers themselves already cannot say anything. They have so many contracts saying that they cannot say. The question is their family. So usually in order for them to get compensation, the families also have to say they will not sue, they will not say, they will not speak to the media and so on. We know only when they have settlements, when the courts say settlement, that they give some money, but we don't know how much usually, and we don't know how many, and we don't know what conditions. And also their doctors are only doctors that work with the commission.
I mean, if you only have a nuclear reactor that is making energy like Chernobyl or Fukushima, that's just one thing, you have lots of possibilities for accidents, but if you've got added to that, you've got uranium enrichment, you've got plutonium reprocessing, and you have actually the making of the warheads, then you have, you know, many more possibilities. Have there already been accidents? There's been some rumors and speculation that in 1966 there was a criticality accident at Dimona. We don't know what's been happening in that plant, and actually it seems that there's probably more secrecy than there was in the Soviet Union, because quite quickly after the Chernobyl accident it was actually said that there had been the accident. So I think Israel is more better to compare on the level of secrecy about a nuclear program with perhaps North Korea, because we know nothing about their program either. We do know that they have one, and at least North Korea is making claims that it has nuclear weapons, whereas Israel is pretending that it doesn't. So I'm not trying to say that there will be worse or better, but there are many more possibilities, so the risk is definitely higher.
Our next stop in search of answers about the Israeli nuclear program and its secrets is a Palestinian village. Dahriya, very close to Dimona, and a military field where Israel might be burying nuclear waste from Dimona. In Dahriya, a Palestinian doctor struggles to keep Dimona's victims alive. Cesium is not present in nature and can only be found in areas where a nuclear disaster or test takes place.
We know how cesium works on the body because of Chernobyl and Fukushima. Both of those accidents showed us a lot of about how cesium actually affects human health, and that there are claims that there has been a study that has found cesium in the region, and cesium is an indication that something has happened with a nuclear activity. It most likely would be, depending on the amount of it, would be from a nuclear accident, or it could be from leaking radioactive waste.
In some areas of Palestine, the presence of cesium is at the same levels as in Chernobyl or Fukushima, places where the worst nuclear accidents took place.
It's a radioactive isotope. It has a half-life of 30.2 years, and it acts like potassium or like salt. It's water soluble, so it can spread very quickly through the body, and it tends to concentrate then in muscle tissue, and you also have muscles in certain organs like heart and stomach and intestines, so that's where often cesium will end up, and at that point it starts then to mutate the cells within those muscles, and you end up with cancer of the colon, cancer of the stomach, of the lungs sometimes, and it can lead to heart disruption.
There are many rumors about where they bury the waste, but my, and not just my, estimations are that all the materials are buried in the area surrounding the reactor, and the reason is that these materials are secret. They don't want people to go and take land samples or go with Geiger.
The Geiger counter is an electronic device that measures the level of radioactivity. These devices are allowed for use everywhere in the world. It is sold everywhere, even online, but not in Israel. Despite claiming to be democratic, Israelis cannot buy a Geiger counter inside Israel.
One of the major problems that we have, again, it goes back to the secrecy problem, is that we can't even measure the amount of radiation in the area, because that's not allowed. And the Israeli law even says that if you take a Geiger counter into the area around Dimona and measure the radioactivity, you could be then sentenced to 15 years in prison. So nobody's going to do that. I know people even thought about doing it, but they didn't. It's certainly very risky to try to do any research on this at all, which is why number one problem is to get rid of the secrecy.
What is the security of Israel, and why the security of Israel is so different than the security of the people that live in Israel? And we hear rumors about buildings where the levels of cancer is unbelievable. And when we wanted to ask doctors, we also didn't get any answers. And one of funny or sad answer we got was that we cannot measure the amount of cancer, radiation-related cancer in Israel, because we had so many people coming from Chernobyl, from Kiev, and that changed the numbers. So that was one answer we got. And of course, this is not a serious answer. People in Dimona are not rich, most of them. This is, if they were rich people, they wouldn't live next to a reactor, I guess. They wouldn't be depending on this reactor for their livelihood. A few years ago, they all got iodine pills that were very old iodine pills, and that was it. And they're not asking, and that's the problem, that they're more afraid to talk about it than the radiation.
But there are more cases around Palestine. In a small village lost in Al-Khalil Hills, there are other victims. One of them has already died. His son fears the consequences of telling his father's story and only accepts to talk if we protect his identity. But this and many other cases come from the same region.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد عودتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
Dear respected brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Habibullah Fasihizada with the Let's Recite the Holy Quran, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools
of
Network.
Of course, me.
Yeah, yeah. And also a group of, students of Sevier International School. I really welcome you all again. Thank you so much for joining us. So we have here Muhammad Hadi Naghawi and
Sayyid
Muhammad Hadi and Naghawi. Yes, Sayyid is very important. Okay, great. And we have Mahdi al Husseinan, right? Am I right? And then we have Minhal Hussein Nasser, right?
Yeah.
And also
Sayyid Muhammad Yahya.
Great, Sayyid Muhammad Yahya Ja'fari, and of course me again, Habibullah Fasihizada here. Okay. Thanks for following us and also being with us during these Quranic sessions. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen, we have been practicing and learning the Holy Quran, and I'm sure and I really hope that these kind of sessions must have been useful and beneficial for all our Muslim brothers and sisters hearing us. So let me ask this friends here? Has these classes have these classes been useful for you?
Yeah. So much.
So much?
Yeah. Too much.
So you have learned the Holy Quran, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you can read.
So much.
Right? So we our first objective in holding these sessions to be able to read the words in the Quran, to identify the letters. If, for example, we listen to a qari or reciter, we have to be able to understand him, right? Yeah. For example, the qari recites one surah, we have to understand what words do he say, yes? Or what letters, what harakat. So this is called reading of the Quran. And dear respected brothers and sisters, now, inshallah, if I ask any of our friends here, they are able to read from any part of the Quran. So I mean they can read the words. Maybe there will be kind of mistakes, but of course they can read the words of the Quran, right? So, for example, let me ask them some questions. I will choose a page and tell them to recite. So let's see if they have learned, if these classes have been beneficial and influential for them. So let me ask Minhal Hussein Nasser. So I want him to open page 50 of the Quran. So let's see if he can recite. We are having the Usman Taha version of the Holy Quran. So Minhal Hussein. So Minhal Hussein, please recite inshallah that page. Let's see. A'udhu Billah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
This is a test, okay? Let's see. Okay, this is a test. Let's go.
ألف لام ميم. الله لا إله إلا الله هو الحي القيوم.
ما شاء الله. Okay.
Is this Nez?
I don't know.
Is it this?
Go on.
Sorry, dear brothers and sisters, I have a problem in my throat. نزل عليك كتاب بالحق مصدقا كلمة بين يديه وأنزل
Okay, great. Go to the last line. The last line.
ربنا إنك جامع الناس لي من لا ربي فيه إن
لا ريب فيه right
لا ريب فيه إن الله لا يخلف الميعاد
ما شاء الله الحمد لله recite the salawat that was great
اللهم صل على
محمد وعلى
محمد
وعلى الحمد لله الحمد لله الحمد لله ثم الحمد لله هذه page
what this page please sir
no another page
sir please sir please
go to page 210
what
So, brothers and sisters, page 210. Let's see if Hadi can do it. Of course he can do it, because he has learned that. Because he knows how to read, right?
Okay.
210. He can get 6, he knows a lot.
210.
No, you passed 200.
That's okay.
210.
What page is it?
That's 15.
No, 10, just 10.
210. A'udhu Billah. Okay.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وإذا تتلى عليهم آياتنا بينات قال الذين لا يرجعون لقاءنا ائت بقرآن غير هذا
okay we have learned that
هذا
أو بد له قل ما يكون لي إن أبد
That's nice. The last line. Go to the last line. Okay. Let's see.
ويقولون لولا أنزل إليك آيات إن من ربه فقل إنما غريب الله فنتظر إني معكم من المنتظرين.
منتظرين right? That was great. MashaAllah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad.
قرآني في قلبي دوما يغمرني من فيض ضياء آيات
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's recite the Quran.
Respected brothers and sisters, consider this, that these pages are randomly chosen, okay? It means from any pages that you now call us, okay? That Minhal Hussein read this page, inshallah they are able to read it. Yes?
Now Qari Abdul Basid Mahdi
Hussainan. Now Qari Abdul Basid Mahdi Al Hussainan is gonna read page... Okay, Muhammad Yahya, you
please,
choose
sir.
One page.
Please,
no,
please,
no,
18.
300.
Page,
no. Page
810.
Sir,
we don't have page
800.
Sir,
I'm
18.
Page 18. You know how to read page 10 because we have practiced it.
Page 333.
Page 18.
I remember, this is 18.
Okay.
Walladina
hadu hadi, right? Because of that. Now go to page 18. Page 18.
So I can't read anything. So
I mean, read it. Let's see.
Okay. How about I just read? How about I read page
18? Right, page 18.
No.
أعوذ بالله
من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
read aloud okay
read
great
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وقالت
the thing is don't be afraid
yeah just
because
read
okay just go
وقالت
they are the same as the pages that you can read them without problem without mistake so do this one as well وقالت يهود
وقالت اليهود ليست الناصر
okay.
النصارى
هذه
please,
stop
please.
Cheating
ليست النصارى على شيء
okay.
وقالت mm-hmm. وقالت النصارى
mm-hmm.
ليست اليهود على شيء
bravo ما شاء الله
يتلون الكتاب
That's it.
Recite it in a beautiful voice.
Anna.
Because
Go on, dude.
كذلك
Look at the حركات.
كذلك
What does Lam have?
It has a كسرة.
So, how do you say it?
كذلك
that's
قال
it.
كذلك قال الذين لا يعلمون
mm-hmm.
مثل
okay.
قولهم
or
قولهم
okay
فالله
أحسن
يحكم
Great.
يحكم بينهم
mm-hmm.
يوم القيامة.
Okay. If you join يوم with قيامة, how do you
يوم
say
القيامة.
Great. يوم القيامة.
فيوم.
What does the fa have?
Come on, you are
في
يوم
في يوم
في يوم. Is it? Do we have يوم there? في
يوم
في.
Sir,
what's after يوم?
What's after the yat is alif, it's a meme.
Meme and alif. So how do you say it? Fi?
Fima ka. Fima?
Ka.
Fima.
That's it. That's it. Go on. Go on.
So can I just read the last line?
Inna rusul.
Last ayah.
Oh, good.
Last ayah.
One.
Inna rusul. Inna. Inna.
Look, Mahdi.
Mahdi. I'm trying to read the harakat.
Look at me. Yeah. You have to read. Don't say it. You have to read the words by the help of the harakat.
Yeah.
Bi, bil, haqi.
Okay.
Bashiran. Bashiran wa nadhiran.
Okay.
Wa la tas.
What does the ta have?
Tus'alu an ashabu ashabul jahim.
Bo be ba, which one?
Ashabi.
Okay. With la asha.
Ashabi al-Jahim.
Ashabi al-Jahim. MashaAllah. MashaAllah. Okay, yeah. Recite okay, the
sir,
salawat.
Sir, can I pick his page?
Yeah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. That's enough, okay? Up to this part, inshallah, we will continue. We'll get back, okay? But before we go, let's give thanks to IRIB English
and say Muhammad Yahya Ja'fari from
Xavier International School.
From Xavier International School.
And Ali Abdul Basit. And Pakistan.
Okay. So thank you so much. Let's recite a salawat.
Allahumma
salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faraj.
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.